Now, whatever the truth is in this particular case, these claims of sexual abuse of juveniles throw a light onto what is unquestionably a real social disease. Young, vulnerable people, poor, sometimes homeless, drug addicted, and selling sex to get by. We talked about this on KUOW's Week in Review with The Strangers editorial director Dan Savage, and Dan framed it like this.
There are kids out there in desperate circumstances and survival prostitution, whether it's straight kids or queer kids or any kids, is a tragedy. But before these kids can be in that circumstance where they can be exploited, they have to be failed. Mm-hmm. They have to be failed by families of origin. They have to be failed by their communities. They have to be failed by social service agencies and really the society and the culture. But there are kids out there who every day are being exploited.
Survival prostitution or survival sex. That's what we're going to talk about now. My next guest has worked with homeless youth for 18 years. Today, Leslie Briner leads training on sexual exploitation and human trafficking for youth care, providing services to homeless youth in Seattle. I asked her to define that term, survival sex.
Generally, we define survival sex as the exchange of sex acts for basic needs, which can include food, shelter, protection, a place to stay, anything that one would need to survive.
What about servicing an addiction? Would you include addictive drugs in that?
I do, and I would say broadly the field does. So the exchange of sex for drugs would also fall under that category of survival sex. And while we're not suggesting that one needs drugs to survive, it is a kind of catch-all category for trading sex for basic things that get us through the day.
Why is it so hard to know how many kids today are selling sex to survive?
Well, certainly this is a very hidden and underground issue, as I'm sure many of your listeners can understand. And so it does make identifying or trying to create or understand the full prevalence of it quite difficult. Many people associate this as being where domestic violence was 30 or 40 years ago when it was, and it still is quite difficult to get good data on either of those issues. So part of it is the subterranean nature, and part of it is that the trends and kind of how the sex trades and work have shifted dramatically over the years. And so being able to find a methodology that pinpoints that is quite difficult.
You just heard Dan Savage say that before kids end up in a situation where they're selling sex to survive, they have to be failed. You would agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And I thought he put that in a very useful way, which is that there is this safety net out there that I think many of us believe kind of catches children when things are going wrong, right? Whatever that might look like. And certainly what I have seen in my years doing this is that they fall through any crack there is. And be that social services or the fact that until just recently we would have criminalized the 15-year-old for selling sex, there are many cracks to fall through. And I certainly agree with Dan's point on that.
You just said something very important. There was a time we would criminalize survival sex.
Absolutely.
Things are changing. And that's not always, sometimes it just seems intractable and hopeless. How has the situation changed, let's say, since the 1980s in Seattle?
I think most people don't realize that until, 2011 in this state, it was not a felony crime to buy commercial sex access to a child or to pimp or traffic a child. And if your listeners are thinking, well, that's child abuse, yes, on its face, it certainly is. But the way that was interpreted across that whole kind of group of people that have failed these kids was that the child was the criminal. And most often the child, if it was ever identified at all, would have been arrested for the quote unquote crime of prostitution. And most often the adults in the situation would have, walked away to whatever their lives looked like. So it wasn't until we changed the laws really 5 or 6 years ago that we stopped arresting and criminalizing minors for prostitution. And
what caused that change?
Well, advocacy, certainly. There's been a growing movement since the early 2000s, and the change in federal law in 2000 and then the reauthorization in 2008 of the federal legislation, which is called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, or TPVA, was the sort of first part of that that shifted things, and then state laws changed as a result of that, and using some of that framing. So there was certainly survivors and activists on the ground much earlier talking about the gross injustice of arresting youth as young as 12 and 13 year old for prostitution, but it was really a movement, a policy movement in the early 2000s and then late 2000s that actually changed the laws.
My guest is Leslie Briner, who leads training on sexual exploitation and human trafficking, and you work with homeless youth particularly. How does homelessness play into survival sex in a special way?
So homelessness and a history of previous harm and poverty really are the huge predictive factors or vulnerabilities for this type of experience happening to a young person. So if you think about it, no matter what's the situation that drove a person to the streets, right, whether or not they got kicked out, whether or not their parents couldn't afford them anymore, whether or not they were fleeing abuse, whether or not they were fleeing discrimination, when you end up on the streets, there's really only a handful of survival strategies and what we call the kind of the economic strategy. And exchanging sex is one of those. So there's a very limited set of options and pathways once you're in that vulnerable situation. And certainly not all homeless youth engage in this, or this is not happening to them, but there's a very, very high percentage that are, because again, you need an economic strategy in order to survive.
What does the general public not understand about what young people do to survive?
Well, I think that there's a number of myths and misconceptions about general engagement in the sex trades or the various different ways that youth are surviving. So I think it's easy to walk down the street and, see the places where homeless youth congregate and be very judgmental and think that that's a result of their own bad choices or their own moral failings. And what I can tell you from many, many, many youth I've worked with is that they're doing their absolute best, right? They're doing their best to get through minute by minute to survive and get their needs met.
They're doing their best with what they think they have.
Correct. And they're existing in a landscape of, dwindling and economic resources, lots of discrimination. Certainly the young people impacted by this are also very overrepresented in marginalized communities, like the LGBTQ community or people of color or people who are experiencing, poverty and homelessness. So our own perceptions about who street youth are, I think, is one of the biggest myths and misconceptions. And then I think there's still a lot of people that have beliefs about prostitution and the commercial sex trades that place the, majority of the blame on the person selling or trading sex. And while that's a much more complicated conversation, these are young people, and they're young people that should have our care and protection and not our blame and criminalization. And while we've made some strides in the last 10 years, there's a lot more work to do on that.
Why? Why have we left so much undone? Why do we still, sometimes misconception is a very passive word, Sometimes you don't want to understand. What's your take on young people, desperate, vulnerable, turning to selling sex to survive? Why is this still happening?
Well, I think that in order to understand why something happens that's a systemic issue, it forces us to look at the systems that we all participate in and to some degree or another are complicit in. And so I think it's easier for your average person to look at a kid on the street and think either they messed up or their family messed up. It's much harder to step back and say, what is the nature of society that says it's okay for a kid to live on the street or for adults or people with more power to exploit younger people or people with less power through the sex trades? I think that we have to look in a mirror when we start analyzing the bigger picture of why this happens. And that's deeply uncomfortable and, tough for folks. But we all have walked through downtown Seattle. We all have walked past homeless youth on the street and, maybe clutched our purses a little tighter or, looked away from them or looked at them with some sort of disgust or derision. But we all live here in Seattle, and they live here too, and they have just as much right to have a life free of violence and exploitation and to be respected. And it's hard to acknowledge that we're all part of that same system. So we want to distance ourselves from that. We want to other them. We want to make it a result of their bad choices or maybe their family's bad choices. But to see us all a part of the same system is hard, and it's the work we need to be doing.
That is really true. I mean, survival sex is a reaction, and it's an attention-getting thing, but it's a reaction to something that's so much bigger.
Absolutely. You know, there are lots of complicated beliefs and opinions about the commercial sex trades, and it's not my intention to get into that. But if you had to do this in order to get through the day, I feel like it's difficult to look at that and say, you know, that's a choice that was made by a young person that had a full suite of options available to them. So this idea that, you know, they're out there by choice and this is something they want to do is another one of those deep myths and misconceptions. And while some young people, you know, it may work for them in some way, the reality, and back to your kind of bigger picture question, is they should have a lot of other options. And what I can tell you is they don't have a lot of other options.
We will link to some resources for people in vulnerable situations. But as you know, Leslie, sometimes, maybe most of the time, you don't know what's really going on with someone in your life. You can't see everything they're dealing with and what they're turning to, survival sex or otherwise. Then what do you do?
Yes. So one of the things that keeps this underground is because we're afraid to have conversations about it, right? We are a society that is both averse to having conversations around sex and yet is extremely sexualized. So just talking with the young people, or not even just the young people, but anybody in your life about... sometimes people trade sex as for money or things that they need to survive. Is that going on in your life? Is there anything we can do to support you? There's a number of different ways that you could initiate that conversation if you were directly concerned that this might be going on for somebody. But the key is, no matter what you say, to say it without judgment and to say it with compassion. And back to some of the things I said earlier, like dispelling that judgment can sometimes be hard. So that's a really important piece. But even if just, you know, people in your life that you think might be at risk, making sure that they know that they have somebody that they can come talk to, again, that, you know, no matter what you say to me, that I won't judge you. There are resources available in our community if you want somebody else to talk to, how to have healthy communication, how to keep themselves safe, how to trust their instincts, how to, you know, access the trusted people in their lives to get support. Because what happens is you get into a really tough situation, and then oftentimes the young person blames themselves and they're afraid or they're ashamed to go talk to somebody about it. So if before that happens, somebody reaches out and says, hey, no matter what happens, I'm here. And I can talk to you, and there's no judgment. They're much more likely to go seek support earlier on if somebody has, you know, reached out and made that offer to begin with, and talk to them in ways that are safe and non-judgmental about, we just want you to be safe, and we just want you to have the support that you need.
We've been talking with Leslie Briner about homelessness, youth, vulnerability, survival sex. Anything you want us that you want to leave us with, Leslie, to think about?
Well, understanding this issue also requires us to understand that there's a lot of shifts and trends, and that this isn't just about street-based prostitution or, you know, things happening in parks or in private residences. There's a whole online aspect to this now. And, you know, really what historically were what I call sort of the street-based marketplace has largely moved online.
Right.
And there's just a whole understanding of that I think that most people are not aware of yet. So in addition to talking with young people about making sure that, you know they have support where they need it, also talking to them about how to stay safe online, and talking about, you know, what happens if someone reaches out to you and you know things just feel weird, and so there's the online element too that folks should be aware of. And I guess the last thing I would say is, I spent a lot of years in my career being very angry about this, and while I still think that there's a justifiable rage that most of us should have, you know, at the idea of young people being exploited in this way, I believe another way is possible. And I believe that if we are willing to dig in as a society and look at the root causes of this around poverty and discrimination and child abuse and homelessness and you know, just the dwindling economic resources, that we can do things differently. And I know right now that landscape seems very daunting, but I have seen a lot of change in my years doing this. You know, years ago, I was laughed at by lots of people for the idea that we shouldn't lock kids up for this. And we don't lock kids up for this anymore. So so there is hope. And I, for one, choose to believe that there's a different way out there to support young people and to be in community.
You're forgiven for getting mad, but let's do the work. Leslie Briner has worked with homeless youth for 18 years. She's leading training these days on sexual exploitation and human trafficking for Youth Care, an organization that provides services to homeless youth in Seattle. Leslie, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
You might need some help. You might know somebody who needs help and understanding. So we have a link to some organizations that support young people in King County. That information is at our website right now, KUOW.org. And we're tweeting out a link to that organization, Youth Care, right now. So join us at KUOW.